And then, you know, you get to the point where there's just no point in trying. I'll fail. I know I will. I've always failed. No need in trying that again. I'm just a failure. And then there's they're afraid of success. Well, if I do it, nobody will like me. The martyrs, God, I love them, you know. You ever think about the word martyrdom? To martyr is dumb. Tells you right so in the word, you know. I study words, you know. I'm big on words. I like that. But it's your attitude is what guarantees you failure or success. You know, a lot of things that I have failed at have been my biggest successes because I learned not to do it. And let me tell you, if you can learn what to not to do in this life, you've done good. Let me tell you, it's not well and what to do, it's what not to do. You know, it's like, oh, God, it hurts when I do that. Well, don't do that. What a concept. What a concept. There's another thing, too. On that fear of failure and fear of success, I had one that she says, well, I'm afraid to try because then if I don't make it, I said, oh, God, yes. I said, let's just stay a victim forever. God, you wear those little victim shoes so well. You know, she just walks around, beat me, kick me, hurt me, tell me I'm cheap. I love it. And you know what people do? They walk around on her, tell her that she's cheap and that she should love it. That's what they do. You get what you ask for. You know, if you go around and when somebody calls you a chair, if you don't fold up, you don't have to be a chair, you know. I can call you an idiot. Does that make you an idiot? No. That's just my opinion. You know, and it tells us in our program that, you know, our opinions that take what you want and leave the rest. So many times you hear people talk about the program and they say, take what you want and leave the rest. That's not what it says. It says our opinion, opinions expressed here are those of the person who expressed them. Take what you want and leave the rest. It doesn't say take the program, take what you want and leave the rest. You know, that's those little things where we take stuff out of context. Now I learned opinions are like asses. Everybody's got one. They all stink. So I listen to those opinions. And you know, the thing it is, I've been known to change an opinion. If you haven't changed an opinion or an idea, you might ought to check your pulse. You may be dead. Because the longer I live and the older I get and the more experiences I have, the more I learn that some of those people were right. And that I didn't know everything. So you have to learn to be content. Learn to be content wherever you are and whatever the circumstances are. It gives a purpose to your life. It gives one to mine. When you can become of use to your God and your fellow man, you know, it never occurred to me. There were certain things that I always wanted to do in my life. You know, I married a military man because I wanted to travel. I got rid of him, married a drunk. Now I travel more than I've ever traveled in my life. So I would never thought it would come that way, you know. But I practice being content where I'm at. If I'm here in Altus, Oklahoma, I better be content in Altus, Oklahoma, because if I'm not content here, I'm not going to be content when I get home. You know, I've got to learn it's a one-day-at-a-time thing, and I have to be happy where I'm at. I have to be content. And when I'm doing what God would have me do one day at a time, I don't have time for self-pity. I just don't have time for self-pity, because what good does it do? Now, you know, I'm not going to tell you that when I find that I have physical limitations or when I got sick or when I had that stroke or, you know, back when I hurt my back this year, I have a herniated disc. It's not nice. And, yeah, you do feel sorry for yourself a little. You know, it hurts when you're in pain. It hurts. You know, and you go, no, and it's just like he asked me, could I do cartwheels? I said, yes, I can, but I choose not to do that today. Because then I don't want to hurt myself. See, I've learned to value myself, and I've learned to accept my limitations. And when I do that, I realize that a limitation, God doesn't close a door. He doesn't open a window. And that there will be some positive things come even of my limitations. You know, I used to watch my mother-in-law. She was illiterate. And we'd go to the grocery store. And the only time she needed my help at the grocery store is if she was going down the soup counter. Because soup labels all are the same. Everything else had a picture on it. She didn't have to worry about being able to read or write. But did you know something? She had the best memory I have ever seen in my life. Where she had a limitation, God gave her something to overcome. You know, and I think that happens with all of us. No matter what our limitations are, God gives us something. And, you know, it's through some of these limitations, like I'm a little itchy. You know, she's got a blind son. He was run over by an upstruck when he was 5 years old. And he had to have 20-something surgeries on his brain and what have you. And he has some physical limitations in addition to being blind, you know. And when I watch him go around and his attitude and what have you, and we don't treat him like a blind kid. We treat him like a normal kid. And you know something? He responds like a normal kid. You know he's going to regular college, and he is a sophomore, and he's making good grades. And it's because we don't put limitations on him. We allow him to assess where his limitations are, and we don't do it for him. And, you know, there was a time in my life when I wanted to help people and to keep them from having to stretch themselves and be good to them, be kind to them. If we'd have done that with Brent, if Teresa had done that with Brent, he would be a cripple today. But he's not a cripple today. He goes walking. He gets out there and goes walking. He goes to track meets. Now, that's something to behold. You know, a bunch of have you ever been to a track meet and see a bunch of blind kids running the 50-yard dash? Just keeping them in their lanes a trip. They have a little string. They have a little string, and they hang on to that little string, and they go down. I think, God, if you go too fast, you get string burns on your finger. I mean, you know. See, my mind thinks like that. You know, he's just out there, man, I'm going to tear it up, you know. But he wins lots of little things like that. You know, it's been neat. It's been neat to be around people like that. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. In order to establish true trust with our fellow man, we must learn to love and accept them as they are, not as we want them to be. We need to accept them where they are without compromising our own standards. And we need to do that for ourselves. We need to do that for ourselves. That means that we may demonstrate our support by affirming a friend's right to make his own decision and the choices, even though we may disagree with him. You know, you have the right to make your choice, even though I think it's the wrong one. And I'm going to love you enough to give you the freedom to do that. I don't co-sign bull. I allow them to make their mistakes and love them anyway, even though they're making it. I've got one right now that I'm sponsoring, and she's in a relationship that was one of those, you know, we met one week and we were madly in love the next. And he's like, you know, 2 or 3 months sober. Yeah. And then we all go, oh, you know. Another, you know, it's like a jitterhouse romance. But, outwardly it doesn't look like there's a chance in hell of that deal working. But I have to give her the right to do that deal. You know, I've told her what statistically we know, and you can share your experience about it. And the bottom line is she's going to have to do what she's going to have to do. And the thing of it is, I know there's nothing that'll happen to her that God can't fix. And that's the reason you can let go of that. But each day is a gift from my higher power. The gift of life is personally mine today. I can choose to enjoy it or destroy it, whatever I want to do for any given day. Selfish, the disease of mine. I want it all for me. That's what selfish is to me. And the genuine caring about another person and giving them the freedom to make the choices that I have to make. You know, the greatest love I can give for another person is to accept them just as they are. And that's the kind of love I found in these rooms. I did not find that outside. I'm sure it was there, but I couldn't see it. You know, that's just like, you know, people say, well, I found it this and that and what have you. You know, I said, you know, I didn't find my God in a church. That doesn't mean that God's not there. Frankly, I think God's where the people are, regardless of where the people are. And if the church building is empty, I don't think God's worrying about being there. You know, I think he's out with where the people are, because my God lives inside of me and your God lives inside of you. And when I touch you, it's our God's touching. That's how I feel about it. But that's my feeling. Yours may be different. And I give you the right to do that in your way, in your shape and form. I get a high when I see growth in people. I tell you what, when you go from, like, say, if I see you 1 year and then I see you the next year, and if there's a light come on in your eyes, or you can really tell that you're enjoying life and what God has to offer, that's a high for me. How in the world could we not say we have excitement in these rooms? I can, you know, when I see those people come in and they look dead and they feel worse than dead, you know. Some of them, when they come into Al-Anon, are really grim looking. I'm not kidding you. You know, they're precious and pitiful, you know. Oh, yeah, man, they are precious and pitiful. And after a while, when you see them begin to change, you know, like I was telling you about that girl that was sitting on the bench, and then she got to the table, and then she began to share. You know, she told her story from the podium not too long ago. It's not the same girl. And you know what she was sharing? She said that she didn't know anybody's names for a long time, but she knew what kind of shoes you wore. Because she never looked her head up. When she looked around the room, she looked at everybody's feet, because she was scared to death that you were going to look at her and see that she was so bad that you wouldn't want anything to do with her. And at home, I wear my sneakers all the time. And I like to do things different. And my sneakers at home have different colored shoelaces. And people say, well, why have you one of them got a glow-in-the-dark shoelace that's, you know, green, and this one over here is purple and has Shamu the Whale on it? I said, why do you do that? And I said, so I can tell my left foot from my right. Why do you do it? Always had trouble with that. I can admit it. I said, it's easy to know which one goes on which one. I said, those shoes are the same color. They look alike, and so therefore you make them look different, and then you know exactly where they go. And they think you're joking, you know. That's okay. But she looked at me, and she said, and she's the one that has them weird shoes, you know. And I said, that's right. And she said, for a long time, that was how she knew. She said, this one wears this kind of shoes. And she said, that one wears those little pointy toes, looks like witch's shoes. And this and that. And, you know, she knows people's feet. I'd never even noticed what people had on their feet. But that's all she's looking at. To see that girl today and to see her look you dead in the eye, and when she opens her mouth to share in a meeting, there's good stuff coming out of it, because she's not one of those that shares bullshit. When she shares from the heart. She doesn't share, like, say, every meeting or anything like that, but when she decides to say something, it goes right to your heart. And I'd rather hear Cindy share as anybody I know. And that couldn't happen. That couldn't happen for the way she was. We asked her one time, what would you have done if we'd have ran over there and grabbed a hold of you and hugged you and told you, you know, instead of letting you run out before the meeting was over? She said, I'd never come back. Because she said, I was so afraid of people. She said it was all she could do to get out of her house. She was one of those that was almost to the point where she couldn't leave her house anymore. And she said, I had to get there because, she said, I figured if I came early, somebody might talk to me. And she said, I couldn't stand the thought of somebody talking to me. So, but that is just, to me, like I say, it's wonderful when you see that and you realize that that's her gift. She's got a tremendous gift. People coming in today have no idea of what a miracle she is sitting in that chair. That's just like my oldest pigeon. Linda, for the first 3 years, said, my name's Linda and I pass. She was scared to death of people, scared to death. She tried to hide under her ashtray. If she could have gotten under the ashtray, she would have been there. And she wore long hair and combed it over. She looked like a sheepdog because she was hiding. She was hiding behind all that hair. She didn't want to get out, and she was scared. And then all of a sudden, one night in the meeting, all of a sudden, Linda opened her mouth and shared, and I just sat there and cried. We got another girl in our group, and her name is Freezy. Said when she was a little kid that her grandmother used to tell her hands was always cold and freezy, so they named her Freezy. And she's a beautiful, beautiful woman. She could go on a fashion page any day of the world, but see, Freezy couldn't read, and she was ashamed. She was afraid. Well, we got talking, Freezy, and we told her, we said, you know, in here we don't care other than the fact we want it'd be easier for you to learn if you can read, and can you get a tutor, and can we help you? And you know something? At our meetings, we read Understanding Ourselves, which is one of our pamphlets. It's sort of like it's comparable to How It Works in AA. And one night, we were in there, and somebody said, Freezy, will you read Understanding Ourselves? And Freezy read Understanding Ourselves. And the whole group cried because we knew how many years it had taken her to get to the point where she could read. She's dyslexic, and they had told her in school she was stupid. And she left school because she didn't know she had a disease. And see, that's some of the miracles. And how in the world I could have missed all that, because I'd have been sitting there in those meetings saying, why don't they get somebody that can read instead of somebody that stumbles over that? Nobody ever read it any better with more feeling than that girl read. And yeah, she made some mistakes. Who gave her care? Who cared? You know, that's that getting that high, you know, to get rid of that feeling on the inside that what you want and how you want it, to get out of self just a little bit. I tell you what we're going to do. Let's take a little break now so Chris can have another Coke. She told me, she said, I've got to have a... Self-seeking will slip away. Now, like I say, I like words. There's a difference between selfish, self-centered, self-seeking. Selfish is, I want it all for me. That's real simple. Self-centered is, I figure it's all about me. You know, I'm so self-centered that I think everything you think or do, it has something to do with me. You know, I can remember, it was real funny, one of the first meetings in Al-Anon that I went to over at this 120.5 group, my sponsor's husband was speaking. I didn't know that was her husband that night because she wasn't my sponsor then. And here was this black man, bald-headed, and he was talking about things, and he said, you know, it's sort of like a fat woman trying to hide under a tent dress. And I said, you mean like a bald man wearing a hat? I was so self-centered, I thought he was saying something to me when he didn't even know I was there. And of course, I had to retaliate. And he laughed and said, exactly. Yeah. See, he was well, you know. You know, I didn't know you weren't supposed to heckle from the audience, you know. You know, but what goes around comes around. One time I was talking at this AA meeting in Hot Springs, and it was around Christmas time, and this guy that came in, and it was evidently his first meeting, and he was feeling no pain. And bless his heart, anyway, I started talking a few minutes. He said, well, when am I going to get to talk? And so they got him to sit down, you know, in the chair. And he said, "That is a woman is the darndest talking woman I believe I've ever heard in my life. She's got more to say than I ever wanted to hear." You know. And I thought about that night with Joe. Okay, so selfish is I want it all for me, and self-centered is figuring it's all about me, and self-seeking is what's in it for me. That helps me to differentiate the truth, because, you know, the book talks a lot about the different kinds of self. What's in it for me? When we begin to lessen our acts of kindness and helpfulness because we think those receive them do not properly appreciate what's being done for them, it's time to take a look at ourselves. See, that's what's in it for me. If what I'm doing for you is not getting me the result I want, then I'm doing it for me. That's that self-seeking. What's in it for me? What you sow, you'll reap. That doesn't mean you'll reap it from where you sow it. And see, that used to bother me a lot. If I spend a lot of time with you, working with you on a particular thing, you're supposed to get better. And it never occurred to me that I get better every time I have to tell you about it. Because what it does, it reconfirms within me what I believe. And it helps me to keep acting like what I believe. And a lot of time I put a lot of energy in over here, and I don't see any results. And it gets frustrating. And the bottom line is over here, this person may be getting it just by listening from over here all the time. So I found that a lot of times I shortchange myself in life because I look where I put it out over here and expect it back from there when I'm getting it from this over here, and I never give them credit for doing it over on this side. Now, I did this with my mother and my sister. All my life, I looked at my mother and said, not good enough. She's not a good mother. She doesn't do the things. She's not a nurturing mother. She's not a loving mother. She's not a kind mother. She never has a kind word to say to me. All she does is tell me when I screw up what I've done wrong. And I want her to love me. So I go back over here and I keep working on this. I want her to tell me she loves me. I want her to show me she loves me. I want her to do something like I want her to do to let me know that she feels like I want her to feel. Now, damn it, I'm tired of this. You know, what's in it for me? I'm going over there getting that back. Now, what's happening all these years? My older sister, she's 15 years older than me. What is my sister doing? She's loving me. She's being supportive of me. She's encouraging me. She's doing all those things that I wanted from over here. And I miss it because it's not coming from the right person. Now, I benefited from all of that, but I never gave any credit to that. And I just took it for granted. I was due that. You know, I'm such a... You know, we're such self-centered people that we take all that kind of stuff for granted and think, well, I deserve that, you know. And it never occurred to me till I met some of y'all that that's not what sisters and brothers usually do for one another. That's what parents do for one another. And you see, that was where God was helping me because he knew what mother was capable of. And he knew what mother wasn't capable of. And so mother was doing the best she could, but it wasn't what I felt like I wanted or needed. But God was giving me these things from another direction, so I missed it. Now, the same thing's true is if I do something good over here, I have no right to expect anything for what I do. Because expectations are premeditated resentments. When I do something expecting a result, what I've done is I've set you up for failure and me up for disappointment every time. Every time I do that. Because if I don't get back from you in the way I feel like I'm supposed to, then I get my feelings hurt and I get resentful. And I get revengeful, too. So I had to learn that it doesn't work that way. My job comes from giving unconditionally, no expectations, giving for free. Because when you think about it, when you come into these rooms, what does it cost you to recover? Just be willing to give up self-will, that's all. Just your whole life, that's all. Nothing more than that. Just your whole life, you know. But the bottom line is it doesn't cost, you know, if you never put a penny in the pot when it goes around, then nobody gonna tell you you can't come here and recover. It doesn't cost you anything. You freely get the stuff because we freely share the experience. That's just like when I come to talk for here, you know. Several years ago, I was talking down in Texas, and the girls got carried away on their flyer. And they put on there, you know, there's a registration fee for the weekend, and said, make your checks payable to MERP, M-E-R-P. So everybody said, well, since when did you start charging to talk? And I said, I haven't started charging to talk. And they said, well, and they showed me one of those flyers, and I like to freak. I said, I can't believe that. And she said, well, we just thought it'd be simple. And I said, you thought it'd be simple. I said, I've never charged for anything I've done in this program. I said, the only thing when I come is that I ask that my transportation, my lodging, and my food be covered. I've never asked for anything other than that. And I said, and that's only because I don't have the money to do it. You know, I was taught a long time ago that if you... We pay our speakers and what have you, their expenses to come, because you never know. Yes, a lot of people can afford to go. For some people have got the funds that they can afford to go and do that. But then you're limiting the people who can't afford to go. That's just like the reason in our groups that we send our GRs to our district meetings and our area assemblies, because we don't ever want to be based on money. And we're self-supporting. We take care of our own, you know, that kind of a thing. So freely I was given this program, and so I have a responsibility to freely give it back. There's a good exercise I have in the evenings, and it's called Have I Helped One Person Today to Feel Better? Have I done anything? Am I at least a little wiser today, if nothing else? Did I try to make someone feel a little more cared for? Did I help someone to learn how to do just a little something better to make their life a little better? Then I haven't had a bad day. It's not what did I get today, but what did I give today? That keeps you out of that self-seeking stuff all the time. People who are self-seekers are people-pleasers. Did you know that? The people-pleaser. That's when I'm doing something to make you like me so that I get a benefit out of it. You see, I'm not doing it for free. I'm doing it in order to have you to like me. So that's self-seeking. And when I do that, I get resentment. I resent me for doing it. I resent you for having that much influence over me, that I should care what you think. See, it's not important what you think. What's important is what me and God know. That's the important things, and yet we will jump through ourselves for what somebody else may think. And I got a newsflash. People are going to think what they want to think. You really don't have that much to do with it, because I have been a complete asshole, and people have liked me, and I have been completely wonderful, and people haven't liked me. So there. You know, I read a book one time, and this guy said that if you found five friends in an entire lifetime that would truly accept you as you are and love you in spite of it, that you had done something truly outstanding. And I thought, too bad he never got here. Five. What a short-changing thing. Because I have friends from all over the world. All over the world. Not just here in Altus, Oklahoma, or Vernon, Texas, or whatever. I've got friends from all over the world. I've got people that I write to from France and from England and from Italy and South Africa and Iceland and all over. Because why? Because we have something in common. It's called recovery through our program. That's all. If it wasn't for our program of recovery, I wouldn't know any of those people. It's just people who would not normally socially mix, right? Let me tell you about that. I was sitting one time in Palm Springs, California, and in my room that night, in my hotel room, we were eating salsa like pigs. And there was a man and his wife from Sweden. There was a girl from Mexico. There was a black man and his Chinese wife. And there was a redneck girl from Arkansas. People who would not normally mix. And we were telling dirty jokes and eating salsa and having a wonderful time. Having a wonderful time. Another thing, when I do something and I'm not doing it for fun and for free, I'm doing it with strings. And the strings always get me bound up. They tie me up. That kind of giving gets me all screwed up on the inside, and I get to feeling less than, and then I don't like you, and then I don't like me, and it's just not worth it. Now, the ninth one says our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Well, God is in life-changing business. That's his business. But he's never chosen to violate my will. God never makes me do anything. Pain will, but God won't. We choose our own attitude and outlook. It's something that we get up and we do. And a lot of people say, well, I have a problem with depression. Well, depression is nothing but anger turned inward on you. That's all it amounts to. You get mad at you and you turn that inward. And that's a byproduct of dwelling on self-pity, too. Poor me. Don't use excuses for rotten attitudes. That's my nature. I can't help the way I am. Oh, I love that one, you know. I was born an asshole, I'll die an asshole. That's what that interprets out, you know. I am what I am. Only Papa can do that and get away with it. Because that's self-deception. You're the way you choose to be. You don't have to be. And no matter how you were born, you don't have to be. You know, the thing about it is you can be poor in finances, but you don't have to be poor in character or poor in spirit. You know? That's a choice. That's a choice. And we were all created equal in that area. We all have that same ability to feel and be spiritual creatures. We are no different in that area. We are all created equal. When they do that self-deception stuff about, I am the way I am, and I can't help how I am, we got a guy in our group that is also a batterer. And just because he's not breaking bones today, he says, I've got progress, not perfection. And, you know, I look at that and I say to myself, you know, I don't think that I could stop with just mere progress on that deal when I'm still hurting people, when I'm still causing damage. And I have to remember that he may be doing it with a hand, but I can do it with my tongue. You know, that he's not the only one that has the ability to do that. Because some of the worst things, you know, it's like my husband tells me, he said, you know, he says, you got a real quick wit, but you got a real quick mouth with it. And that's true. And once you, it's sort of like cards. Once it's laid, it's played. And once you've got that, and when you've said that horrible, ugly, sarcastic thing, all the words in the world will not bring it back. When it's already hit that heart and done that damage, all the I'm sorry's in the world will not change those words that came. And don't you remember when someone has said something hateful and hurtful to you, that sometimes for years I have played that tape and felt that pain one more time. Now, they say it to me one time, but I'll hear that tape a million times. So they've done it to me once, but I've done it to me a million times, and I have to forgive myself. I have to forgive myself for those quick things and those rotten attitudes. You know, it's also spiritual laziness on my part when I'm not willing to make those changes. When I'm unwilling to face my defects and name them and claim them and then allow God to remove them, I'm being very spiritually lazy and I'm being very self-centered. And I'm making a choice to stay in sickness instead of recovery. That's all that amounts to. People say, well, I'm not ready to get rid of this or that, and I'm not ready. You know, I'll give up. Let's see, what will I give up? I'll give up axe murdering. That's a good place to start. Yeah. You know, the thing about it is, it's a lot of people like to escape in their minds with that kind of crap, but you know, that's a real soul sickness. And not only that, it's real sick to wallow in it, and you can die there if you're not real careful. And there's people that die in the rooms of Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous strictly from the unwillingness to make the changes. And if you think they're not there, look around you. I mean, you can tell the people who are working a program that they're showing recovery and they're showing happiness, or you can go to the bitching corner. And there's always those that, you know, that have the absolute nervous breakdown when somebody moves a coffee pot from one side of the room to the other. That's the one I always get. Of me, you know, it's a change. We can't handle that, you know. I'm dying over here, you know. Or the person that says, well, we can't smoke in this room, so by God, I'll go and I don't have to go to these meetings. No, you know, you can't wait an hour for a cigarette and you're going to make a choice to go out there and die, you know. You got to remember where your priorities are. And we're here, we're not here for a bunch of other causes. We're here to get well. And part of that process is learning to be a realist, and this is it, and you got to do the greatest good for the greatest number, and sometimes that's not what I want, because it's not what I like, but I have to remember there's more than me here. I've got to be willing to do that. So this change in attitude. For me, it was a change from negative to positive. You know, I love the story about the two kids. One was the optimist, and one was the pessimist, and they gave each one of them a choice of some toys and things. And they gave the little boy who was the pessimist, they gave him a room full of beautiful new toys. And he just, I mean, they just said, they're all yours. And they turned him loose. And he just sat there and he looked at it and he said, they'll all break. The batteries are going to run down. Probably won't let me take them home. And he sat there and he was miserable in his room of beautiful new toys. And that little boy that was the optimist, he had a better attitude. They put him in a room with horse manure and a shovel. And he looked at it, and man, he started laughing and giggling, and he was slinging that shit, throwing it from one side of the room to the other. And they said, what are you doing? And he said, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere. You know, he chose to look at it in a different light. And I found, like, for me, there's what I call the black dog, white dog theory. And it's like inside of me, there's a force that's negative and there's another one that's positive. And the negative one is the one that has all those resentments and all that self-pity and all that looking for you to hurt me and all that stuff. And then the other side is the God side. War. The black dog represents the bad and the white dog the good. And they're always in a war. Now, who wins? Whatever dog you feed the most. So it's important for me to feed that white dog and to get that positive spiritual reinforcement that I get from going to my meetings so that I don't stay negative. Because, you know, I normally wake up negative. I normally wake up, and for me to live in a positive attitude and outlook is something I have to work at. That's the reason I think they call it trudge. You know, they say we trudge the road of happy destiny. Trudge. Trudge does not indicate skip to Maloo. It does not indicate a happy little joyful every moment of the existence. It means there's going to be some work. Trudge sounds like work to me. And this program has been work. It's hard many times. But the thing about it is, you know, the things that were given to me for nothing in this life, I never appreciated as much as the stuff I worked for, because I had a sense of accomplishment once I had done that. And that's like in the program. I thought the world should revolve around me and what I wanted, because, you see, I was everything in my own little world. But now I realize that what it talks about in the book, I can learn to be one among many. I don't have to be the big dog. I can be one of the pack, and it's okay. The main thing, though, is, you know, if you're behind the lead dog, the view's the same. But view don't change much. But in all seriousness, my attitude is a choice, and I choose to do something different, and that's called a little wisdom. That's what it talks about in the Serenity Prayer, the wisdom to know the difference. I know the difference now, and I know that I'm here to give, not to get, but also know that when I give, I get. Because when I do God's will, I get everything I possibly need. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. There's the big one. Wouldn't everybody love that? Yeah, I know, Derek, you're into this one. Fear of cars. Never to be afraid to trust your unknown future to a known higher power. Because the power behind you is always greater than the problem in front of you. If you can remember that, and if you can apply that, it really works. God's will can be a burden when we refuse to let it work in our lives and we try to fight it. Or it can be a power that carries us one day at a time through any circumstances. I don't have to have a great amount of faith. I just have to have faith in a great and powerful God. You know, a lot of people say, well, you got more faith than I got. I think everybody gets the same amount of faith. It's sort of like a muscle. If you exercise it, it gets stronger. And if you don't, it sets around, gets flabby, and lays there, you know. I mean, that's the bottom line. You got to use it. But God's will supplies all of our needs as long as we perform His work well. That's one of the promises they have in there. I can be happy, joyous, and free, and shan't want for anything. So why should I worry about economic security? Why should I have to worry about that? I don't know. The IRS seems to be real concerned about it. And I used to, too. You know, I used to be terrified of the IRS. You know why? Lied on my tax return. You'd be surprised when you quit lying on your tax return how you don't fear the IRS anymore. It's real amazing how that works, you know? When you start paying your bills, you don't have to worry about being... People have done in you all the time. Can you remember when people you hate for the door to knock and for the phone to ring because of somebody calling you, hassling you about something? I don't have to worry about that anymore. Except those siding calls. They irritate me. And meal time. Don't they know I'm a dog in my food bowl? I'll bite anything that disturbs me. I mean... But I didn't have to do that. And, you know, I found out in doing a fourth and fifth step what the problem was with my economic insecurity. I'm an impulsive, compulsive spender. And when you don't have any balance in that area, you're always going to be in financial problem. You know, I would be the kind that would work and scrimp and save to pay off this so you could buy that. Now, let's always have a loan at the bank. Let's don't ever have a time, you know. Oh, plastic. My plastic was thin as OCD papers from using them, you know what I mean? You know, I had to learn to do without all that. You know, I have one credit card now, and that credit card's for emergencies, like when I travel and stuff. You never know what may happen. But the bottom line is, I don't have to abuse it like I used to do. And when I quit doing that, you'd be surprised how you don't have to worry about the bills. When the bills come in the mail, you can take care of them on a monthly basis, and you don't have to sit there in a panic all the time that something's going to happen. When I did my part, it's funny how all that started changing. And it wasn't J.D. that was doing it to us like I like to tell him he was. But I found that I used to think that the things that meant the most to me were my material possessions. Well, those are things that can be stolen. And those are things that can burn up. And those are things that can be taken away from you. But the true things of life that mean something to me, the security inside me that I'm okay with my God and myself, and that I can love my husband, I can be faithful to my husband, those kind of things nobody can take away from me. It's only when I decide to throw them away that they're gone. So I don't have to be afraid of you. I don't have to be afraid of you seeing me as I am. I don't have to be afraid of where I go and meeting people. And it's this fear of people. You know, I can't remember. Why should I be afraid of another person? You know, most people in this world are not out to get me. I used to think they were. That's that self-centeredness, you know. But when I realized the reality of it is, I'm not a big deal. I'm not a big deal any more than anybody else is. I'm a big deal to me sometimes, you know. But it's not that big a deal. But no one robbed me of that security, economic or of any kind. It was me. The problem was from within, not without. And when I take care of the inside of the cup, the outside takes care of itself. And, you know, it's like back here in the summer, I told J.D., I said, you know, I can't imagine what we're going to do. We've got, we got car insurance coming up on two cars, and I have a new car, and so the insurance on that is just astronomical. And the personal property tax that we have in Arkansas, mm-hmm. plus the real estate tax, plus this, plus that. And I said, we only need, let's see, honey, I don't know how you're going to do it, but we need to come up with an extra $2,000 or $3,000 in a couple of months. Just thought I'd mention that. And while I'm out on the road having a good time, do something. And you know something, God, it met every one of those needs. Met every one of those needs. And it was amazing to me how God does things like that. You know, you get a check in the mail that you didn't even know that was coming, that kind of thing, and you say, oh, man, that took care of the house insurance. Hot dog, you know. And I had already determined, and J.D. says, well, what if we can't pay the insurance? I said, God will protect the house. I just have to look at it that way, do the best you can. And it's like, you know, you don't go out to eat every night of the week if you're trying to pay a bill. You have to learn that there's a responsibility on your part. That's what always tickles me. I have this one girl in my sponsorship family that's always getting her utilities cut off. And I said, there's a problem here. And she said, yeah, she said, I'm not managing my money very well, I don't think. I said, probably not. I said, what do you think the problem is here? And she said, well, I put my money in the bank. And I said, well, where's the money for the utility? It was in the bank. Well, did you send them a check? No. You see, I hadn't had it in the bank so long, I just so wanted to leave it there and just sort of look at it a while. And I said, was it easy to see in the dark? When you had to pay that $75 reconnect, did you think about that? Did you think about that? And she didn't do that once this year. She's done that several times. Obviously, she hadn't learned that lesson yet. And she's always running around thinking if she could just get enough money, she'd be okay. If she could just get her finances together, she'd be okay. She's not okay. And it doesn't have anything to do with her finances. She's not taking care of herself, and she's not trusting God. That's where her problem is. And she says, but I can't see how that has anything to do with the other. I said, well, it doesn't make any difference what you can see. What you see and what you're thinking ain't working here. You know, I don't give a damn what you think. This ain't working. Look at the results. I said, all you have to do is ask yourself, is it working? If it's not working, change it. And she said, I did. I said, what did you do? She said, I let the water go. I said, okay. You know, it just takes longer for some than others, you know, and I don't know what it's going to take there. Okay, 11, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Intuitively. Don't you love that? I always thought women had that cornered. Women's intuition, you know. You know, like, intuitively, I will know how to pick a partner every time. Every time. Every time. I don't know how to pick a long-lasting one, but I can do it every time. Did you know that your prayers and God's graces and mercy are just like two buckets in a well? While one goes up, the other one comes down. There are two methods of human activity, and according to which one of these activity people follow, there's two kinds of basic people. There's one type that use reason to learn what's good and what's bad, and they act according to the behavior, or to that knowledge of their behavior. And then the other type acts like they want to. And then they use their reason to prove what they did was good, and that because it didn't work, here's why. And that was the kind I was. I did what I wanted to do and justified and rationalized why it didn't work. And it was never my fault. I want you to know that. Never my fault. But I found that truth stands on its own. It doesn't require a lot of explanation and justification. You know, when somebody asks you something, it's real funny to me how, have you ever noticed how people answer a question with a question? Have you ever noticed that yes and no seem to be two of the hardest answers to get out of somebody? When you say, would you like to go out for supper? Well, would you? Yeah. Well, where do you want to go? I mean, the question I had was a yes or no question. I didn't hear yes or no. What is the problem there? And it's like, we're not doing that very well. You know, we're not communicating. But intuition is the voice of God. That's the little voice within me, and it speaks to me. And it gives me good, orderly directions, and it helps me to make my decisions and things that keep me in my life in order, where I don't have to be in fear and confusion and doubt and second-guessing myself and should I really have done that or no, I shouldn't, and have all those big, giant discussions that we have with ourselves. Because you see, when you're dealing with your higher power, I get what I call God confidence. And God confidence goes with self-confidence. If I'm doing what I feel God wants me to do, I don't have to worry. I can be confident in what I'm doing. I can be confident in what I'm doing, and I don't have to worry about how you're going to perceive it. And I can be happy, joyous, and free regardless when I make that decision. I have freedom to live life as I've never dared to dream it. I do things today that I never would have dreamed would have been possible. God has given me so many blessings. And prayer and meditation is the ticket into that new dimension called intuition. If you want to know what to do, you've got to contact who's in charge. And that's your higher power. And then it's called, like for instance, just little things, everyday things at the house. My husband's a welder. That doesn't mean he's an auto mechanic. It doesn't mean he's a washing machine repair person. It doesn't mean that he's an electrician. He's a welder. Now, if I need something welded, I know where to go. And used to, you know what I would do when something would break at my house? I would tell J.D. Why would I tell J.D.? And J.D., when he would hear me say the refrigerator's broken or the washer needs fixing, what he would hear is, J.D., fix the washing machine. Now, J.D. doesn't know how to fix the washing machine. But because I've asked him to fix the washing machine, he thinks, he feels honor-bound to go out there and try and fix the washing machine because he wants to please. And because I ask him to do it, he thinks that I think he ought to know how to do it. And so he thinks, well, maybe I should know how to do it. So he goes out there and he tears my washing machine to shreds. And then I have to call a repairman to fix my washing machine. And then he tells me that it costs more to put mine back together than it would to buy a new one. I had that experience. And you know, I didn't do that one time. I did that time after time after time, asking him to do things that were mentioning them to him even, because when he heard that, that's what he heard was fix it. And so intuitively, I began to do something different. And I would pray about it. When the washing machine would go down, I would pray about it. God, I don't want that kind of deal, what happened last time. And the voice would say, call the washing machine repairman. What a concept. And you know something, today when anything goes wrong, automatically, intuitively, I just take care of what needs to be taken care of and call the person who knows how to deal with it. And we don't even bothering him with that. And then all of a sudden the bills come in and I'll tell him, oh, by the way, I had the washing machine fixed or this or that. And he'll say, okay. And that's okay. And you know that has caused a lot less confusion in our household. A lot. There's been many instances when I have had this intuitive thing. I was one time with Jennifer and we were riding on the sleet at home. And all of a sudden there was a bunch of car lights going every which direction. And she panicked and she slammed on the brakes, which of course started us spiraling around. And we were up on this big overpass. And I said, Jennifer, turn in the direction of your slide, hon. Just like that. It wasn't, turn! You know, which would have been my normal reaction. And instead I repeated to her, Jennifer, turn in the direction of the slide. And she was so panic-stricken she couldn't. So I took the steering wheel and I turned in the direction of the slide just before we went off the top of the overpass. And we were in the middle of a 27-car pileup, and we were the only car that was not touched. And the police came, and they said, what are you doing here? And I said, waiting for traffic to clear. You know, it's like intuitively knowing what you're supposed to do. I came in one night from a meeting. I'd been to an open AA meeting, and I came in, and you know how when you come in the house, and at first you don't realize something's wrong, but in looking back at it, you can say there were a whole series of circumstances that weren't right. Like, for instance, the dogs didn't meet me at the front door. There wasn't a light on in the living room, which normally there was. Those kind of things. And in your mind, I think as you're going through that, you think the dogs are out in the backyard. The light bulb must be out. You know, those little split-second things you do. But I came in on a robbery in progress in my home. And I can't tell you, terrified, does not even begin to tell you what the situation was. My gizzard was in my guzzle. I mean, I was just, bleh. And I don't know why to this day, but I ran into my dining room. Now, it's not a likely place to go in the course of a robbery, but the police told me later that I did the most absolute safe thing I could possibly have done because I cleared both exits so that there was no way that I would block them getting to an exit to get out of the house. He said, thieves that are robbing your home have come to get your stuff. They don't want to encounter you. And he said, and so when they're trying to get away, they will kill you if they have to. And he said, you did the most intelligent thing by going that direction. And I said, I didn't have any idea that that was the deal. I didn't have a thought process that says, don't block the exits. There was not one. It was intuitively, God took me in the right direction, where I would be of the least harm. You know, I have to remember those things, that God has been there for me in the most desperate of circumstances. I don't have to worry about those things, that God will give me what I need when I need it. I don't have to worry about having it ahead of time, because it's no good to me until I need it. You know, it's just like having a certain appliance in the kitchen. You know, I don't need it till I need it, and it might as well be put up until I need it. But when I need it, I want it there. Number 12, we'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Now, God has given us all many talents, abilities, and gifts, and he wants us to use them. Why else would he have given them to us? And many times we don't use those that we have, and we're asking for more. You know, we're real greedy people. We want God to give us more, more, more when we're not even doing anything with what we got. But God will not do for me that I can do for myself, only the things I cannot do for myself. My job is just to suit up and show up for duty. It's just that simple. Asking God, what can I do for you today? Instead of, you know, used to, I would pray in the mornings, God, here's your marching orders, boy. Now, I want you to do this, this, and this, and I want you to take care of this, this, and this, and I told God what everything I want him to do. Instead of saying, okay, God, I'm here. What can I do for you today that'll make life for myself and other people better today? What can I do today? And then do those things. Now, you know, a lot of times I don't get these lightning bolts that come in and say, this is your mission of the day. You know, I don't get that. And when I don't have a specific thing that comes to me when I'm doing my prayer and meditation, I do what's right in front of me to do. Those stupid things like my sponsor talked about, like making up my bed, cleaning my house, going to the grocery store, doing those little normal feeble chores, washing, ironing, whatever, talking to people, going to meetings, doing my walking, doing my things that I need to do for me. Unless I have other word, that's what I do. And you'd be surprised how things happen in your way. Like, for instance, my walking at the mall. I started walking, like say, when I got sick, and then I got sort of obsessive compulsive about that too. And now we do 5 miles a day. And I was walking one morning, and there's this boy behind me, and he said, lady, I want you to know something. You have great definition. I said, what? And he said, oh, your calf muscles or something. And I said, oh, thank you. Let me let you know, young man, this is never a compliment I have ever aspired to in my life. Having Arnold Schwarzenegger calves has never been high on my list. Thank you ever so. But, you know, I go out there and I do those things, and I have met people out there at the mall. I have another family out there. And you see, I had gotten sort of smug in the program about us being spiritual people and them being earth people. You know, sometimes we think that we've got a corner on the market because we're in a 12-step program. There are people out there who are well enough, they don't need this. Isn't that amazing? It is to me. And I was walking, and there's a lot of people, and most of the people that are walking out there are walking because of health problems. And if you stay home on your butt eating wrong long enough, you can have them be walking with us too. But there's this man named Raymond. He's retired from the railroad, and he's retired with a heart condition. And Raymond would watch us, and there was several of us girls that would go out there and walk together from the program in the mornings. And then one morning, they were talking about the fact that we were always hugging one another. Always hugging one another, and they thought we were gay. And so then they overheard some of our conversations and decided perhaps we weren't gay. And so one by one, the girls that were walking with me, one of them got a job, and another one got married, and so they didn't no longer walk in the mornings. And so I said, God, you know something? It's real hard to get up in the morning and be committed to going over there to walk, even though I know I need to do it. I've gotten into the, I can't, but we can. Now, God, I want you to go and walk with me, but I'd sure appreciate it if you'd send somebody with skin to walk with, because it just does easier when you do it with somebody. Now, see, I've learned that in this program. You're not going to be as good working it alone as you will be if you're doing it with somebody. And so all of a sudden that morning, this guy, Raymond, walked up to me, and like I said, we'd been saying hi and whatever for a couple of years, and Raymond said, Murph, if you'll slow down a little, I'll speed up a little, and we can walk together. And I said, okay. I said, you know what you are, Raymond? He said, what? I said, you're an answer to prayer. Because I said, you know, you're more committed to coming every morning if you know you're going to meet somebody. And I walked with Raymond for a couple of years. Well, Raymond has lung cancer, and Raymond's dying. And I told God, I said, now, God, they've got married on me. They've done that. I ain't never had anybody die on me. Now, I don't like this. But, you know, Raymond's a special, he's just a special love. I just love him a whole bunch. When he's not able to come walk, we go over to his house. When he comes to walk after those chemo treatments, you know, he can just barely get around. I don't care if we have to walk 1 foot an hour, we're going to walk with Raymond. But, you know, I prayed about that again, and God sent me someone else. Each time, God has sent me someone else to help me because he's doing for me what I can't do by myself. It's just real hard for me to be that committed by myself. But if I have, I know I've got to meet somebody. I got a little girl now. It's a nurse. She comes and walks with me during the week. She only works on the weekends. I never knew anybody just worked on the weekend, you know. But God's doing for me what I can't do for myself. He's helping me, and I'm making the effort to suit up and show up. And so God does for me what I can't do for myself. There's so many miracles I could share with you the rest of this day and night, but there's no point in doing that. I do want to tell you that God has helped me to stay in a marriage that I didn't think I'd ever be able to stay in. All those years of the drinking and then the years of recovery have not all been a joyride, I want you to know. And we continue to have ups and downs. I think it's called life. I think it's what it's called. It's called living. And we have different problems. You know, J.D.'s getting a little older, and every once in a while he goes off into an I'm having an old day. You know, he's like having a bad hair day. Well, he has an old day, you know. And then he feels old and decrepit and sorry for himself, and I want to kick him in the teeth. And then, you know, when I hit the big 5-0, I had a couple of old weeks. And so you look old, you feel old, you smell old. I mean, you just are old, you know. And then I decided, heck, I'm just 2 score and 11. What the heck, you know? No big deal. That was then. This is now. And I'm very grateful to be here. But I want you to know that this past Sunday, the week tomorrow, J.D. and I celebrated 24 years of marriage. God did for me what we couldn't do for ourselves. And you know, that goes against my basic belief system. I believed I'd never give more than 7 years of continuous service to any man. I mean, that was my goal from the beginning, you know. And I have the kind of marriage that I never thought I could have, because I can talk to J.D. and I can tell him how I feel, and on a good day he can do that too, you know. You know, sometimes feelings are just real hard, and sometimes he gets scared. When he gets scared, well, he has a tendency to isolate and hold within himself, you know. And then after a few days or weeks, well, then he has the normal, I'm going to have a fit crisis, and then he's able to talk about it. And I've just learned that that's how that deal goes, but I know, too, not to take it personal, because I can recognize it is fear today, and that's another thing God doing for me. Because, you know, a lot of times you have a tendency to want to take little picky stuff personal when the little picky stuff ain't the problem at all. It's something else that they're not wanting to talk about. And when they get ready, they'll talk. Because you can't make somebody ready to talk before they're ready to talk. And you have to learn to hang in. And it says, are these extravagant? We think not. You know, they're being taken care of. These promises are being fulfilled. If you don't believe so, look at your own life and see how many of these have come true. And if they haven't come true, ask yourself, what step did I not work? Where did I shortchange myself? Where have I skimped? Where have I not done the deal? You know, where have I not taken care of what I need to do? And you know, we have a promise that we have in our group every darn day. And that's our group promise. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. And if you'll let it work. If you're not so stubborn that you won't let the love of the group. You know, the group's love can carry you for a while, but you're going to have to take an action. And I guess that's about it. And I thank you for your attention, and thank you for having me.